Before I get started with today's episode, I wanted to let you know that I'm now posting on Substack and would love for you to check out my articles, videos, and the opportunity to attend a monthly Ask Me Anything webinar. What if suddenly your tried and true maneuvers that consistently ended in orgasm no longer worked, or took so long and the climax so pathetic it was hardly worth the effort? Along with hot flashes, sandpaper sex, and a loss of libido, add the inability to have an orgasm to the list of postmenopause surprises your mom forgot to warn you about. I'm Dr. Lauren Stryker, a gynecologist, best-selling author, and a nationally recognized menopause expert. When it comes to menopause, midlife, and what comes after, I'm betting you've not gotten a lot of information from your own doctor. If women are given good information, they'll make good choices, and I'm here to give you the inside information. Difficulty with orgasm is the second most common sexual issue and is experienced by over 50% of postmenopause women, which brings me to Come Again, the project I've been working on for the last 2 years. Come Again, Postmenopause Sexuality and Orgasm is a solution-driven library of podcasts to address the biological reasons for the inability to become aroused, pain with sexual activity, and difficulty with orgasm. And today, you're going to hear the first two episodes. Episode one is short. It's about a 10-minute introduction, which explains what Come Again is, who it's for, and what's in it. That will immediately be followed by episode two. Do you have good sex? Starting next week, I'll be releasing a new episode every week for a total of 34 episodes. If you're interested in subscribing to Come Again, all you need to do is head on over to my Inside Info Substack, which is drstryker.substack.com, drstryker.substack.com. And then there are two options. Monthly and annual paid Substack subscribers will get one episode each week. Inside Info Plus subscribers will have all access to the Come Again on-demand library, which includes all the episodes, bonus episodes, the video library with companion videos to some Come Again episodes, Q&A videos, and much more. In addition to having access to the Come Again podcast, all subscribers will also have access to my other Substack posts. And best of all, you'll be able to attend my monthly Ask Me Anything webinars. If you're already a paid subscriber to my Substack, you don't need to do anything. You will automatically get Come Again as part of your regular Substack subscription. You'll find lots more information on drstryker.substack.com, including a list of all episodes. And for the next 24 hours, ending Thursday evening, 7:30 p.m. CST, you can get a 20% discount on Inside Info Plus All Access subscriptions. And all the links are in the program notes. One last thing. This episode also marks the end of my third season of the Inside Information podcast. I know, hard to believe. As I head into the fourth season, in addition to some very exciting new content, I'm also going to a twice-monthly format. And with that, I bring you episodes one and two of Come Again. I'm Dr. Lauren Stryker, and I want to welcome you to Come Again, a solution-driven series of podcasts that address the biological and medical reasons for difficulty with arousal and orgasm that occur midlife or as a consequence of menopausal hormonal changes. Come Again is a podcast series in two parts. In this episode, I'm going to walk you through what Come Again is, who it's for, and why it exists. Since Come Again requires a paid subscription, these first two episodes are free. I want you to know exactly what to expect so you can decide if it's for you before you commit. Let me start with the why. The reason for this podcast series is simple. There are no up-to-date comprehensive books, guides, or podcasts that address the biological reasons for difficulty or the inability to orgasm midlife and beyond. What is out there are lots of psychosocial books and podcasts, many of which are excellent. But an exploration of relationship, self, and past experience is not going to help with the lack of lubrication and clitoral nerve endings that are no longer responsive. You don't need to be told to have a glass of wine and plan a date night if your inability to orgasm is due to decreased blood flow because of aging, low estrogen, or damage to blood vessels from medical problems such as diabetes, cancer treatments, or vascular disease. Not to mention the medications that are used to treat those conditions. My goal is to give you solutions, real solutions, to restore sexual pleasure and the ability to orgasm that's been sabotaged by age, lack of hormones, medical problems, or medication. Let me explain what Come Again is. There are two parts. Each part is packaged as a limited series of roughly 15 episodes. Part one starts with an overview of female sexuality, arousal, and orgasm, and gets into the details of what it takes for an orgasm to occur, followed by what can happen as a consequence of menopause, medical conditions, and aging. Basically, an overview of obstacles to orgasm. Part two focuses on solutions, both hormonal and non-hormonal, to eliminate pain, boost arousal, and wake up your clitoris. I address not just issues that result from menopause, but also medical problems like diabetes or heart disease and other specific circumstances. This topic, it can get a little dry, so I throw in lots of fun stuff along the way, including information that is medically completely unnecessary, but interesting, at least to me. Things like the history of vibrators. And then there's always your fast-forward button if you don't want to know the story of Napoleon Bonaparte's great-niece's clitoris. The list of episodes can be found on drstriker.substack.com to help you decide if you want to subscribe. You don't need to subscribe to Substack or download the app to have access to this information. Just go to drstriker.substack.com and click the Come Again podcast tab. I think it's best to listen or read to the episodes in order, but having said that, each episode stands alone, and you can skip what doesn't interest you and go straight to the episode on vibrators. Within a few months, you'll be able to access all of the episodes you subscribe to. The majority of the content is new for this guide, but there are a few topics that I've covered before. So if you bought my books, listened to my Menopause, Midlife, and More podcasts, first of all, thank you. But you will hear some content reviewed and updated here. The goal was to have all the information in one place in a logical order for easy reference. Speaking of which, medical science changes rapidly. What's a given today can be obsolete tomorrow. It's one of the reasons I love studying the history of medicine, as a constant reminder that we're always learning, and that some snarky medical student 50 years from now will say something along the lines of, "Can you believe that back in 2020 they tried to laser the vagina to restore lubrication?" What you will find in this guide is up to date on the day I taped it. It's not realistic for me to promise that I'll update as things change. So follow me on drstriker.substack.com for updates. Most important, this material is meant to be educational and informative. It's not a substitute for medical advice, and you need to consult a healthcare clinician for medical care. As I mentioned, I address the medical, biological, and hormonal reasons for difficulty with arousal and orgasm. I'm not minimizing the importance of psychosocial issues. That's just not my area of expertise. But lucky for me, I happen to know someone who is an expert. Dr. Rachel Zarr is a PhD ASEX certified sex therapist with specific experience on the impact of aging and hormones on sexual function, and she will be my guest on a number of episodes to address the psychosocial aspects of sexual response and also practical things like how to get your partner on board with using a vibrator. Dr. Zarr happens to be my daughter, so proud. But that's not why I asked her to be my expert. People who are not her mother can attest to the fact that she's brilliant and knowledgeable, which is why she supervises and teaches other sex therapists and is a frequent guest on many other podcasts. And I'm pretty sure this is the only mother-daughter podcast that discusses vaginal dryness and what to do if your SSRI has killed your libido and your ability to orgasm. I also want to be clear that Come Again is not a guide to managing menopause. I make references to symptoms that impact sexual function, such as hot flashes, insomnia, and mood swings, but this series of podcasts does not get into the specifics of hormone therapy or non-hormonal solutions. So who is Come Again for? This guide is for women and people who care about women. This guide is intended for anyone who would like to better understand the medical, biological, and physical reasons why so many women have difficulty with sexual function, not just during midlife and as they age, but any age. Really, anyone who's looking for solutions for their decreased libido, difficulty becoming aroused, pain with sexual activity, or difficulty with orgasm. While the majority of women in perimenopause or postmenopause are over the age of 40, there are many women who, as a consequence of surgery, chemotherapy, premature ovarian insufficiency, or premature menopause, who are experiencing these issues below the age of 40. Women of all ages have sexual problems, and while the focus is on women who are midlife or menopausal, much of the information in this book applies to women regardless of hormonal status. This guide is also for healthcare professionals who take care of women. And because I'm trying to do my part to educate the doctors of tomorrow, I am giving away free subscriptions to medical students who participate in the Medical Student Forum on Female Sexual Medicine, a group that I mentor. And that's open to medical students across the nation. I'm a gynecologist, and therefore I only treat folks with vaginas, vulvas, and a clitoris. I know next to nothing about penises, medically. The only thing I know is that a penis is basically a larger and much less sensitive clitoris. I completely acknowledge that people born with a penis can be a woman and that people born with a vagina can be men. But since this book is about anatomy and biology, I don't have the expertise to help women who have a penis. I use the pronoun she throughout the book, not to exclude men with female parts, but because I'm a gynecologist and 100% of my experience that I discuss is with cis women. Also, and more important, the research that I referenced throughout the book only included cis women. So if you're a man with a clitoris, the facts and recommendations in your case are not backed by the current medical literature. Sexual preference, on the other hand, is not relevant to this book. No matter who you have sex with, including yourself, an orgasm is an orgasm. Arousal is arousal. When I discuss penetrative sex, I'm referring to vaginal penetration with a penis or a tool such as a dildo or a vibrator. No matter who or what you have sex with, I just want you to have a good time. And finally, what makes me such an expert? I mean, it's a fair question. I'm an OBGYN, and most gynecologists know pretty much nothing about this stuff. Most OBGYNs, if you did get the nerve to say, I'm no longer able to have an orgasm, have no response other than, I'm so sorry. I used to be one of those OBGYNs. For a variety of reasons, I became interested in menopause, including sexual medicine, and spent years, long after I completed my formal training, becoming educated. So, my qualifications. I'm a clinical professor of obstetrics and gynecology at Northwestern University, the Feinberg School of Medicine, and a certified menopause practitioner of the Menopause Society. I founded the Northwestern Medicine Center for Sexual Medicine and Menopause and was the medical director for 6 years. I have over 3 decades of clinical experience. I'm a senior research fellow at the Kinsey Institute, Indiana University. I've published numerous academic papers, including a comprehensive paper on painful sex postmenopause that was published last year in the leading academic menopause journal. I've written 4 books on menopause and postmenopause sexuality. I'm routinely invited to speak at medical conferences to educate other healthcare professionals, including for the Menopause Society, the International Menopause Society, Harvard, Yale, the American College of OBGYNs, just to name a few. Over the course of my career, I've spoken at well over 100 medical conferences. And that, of course, doesn't cover the hundreds of public lectures I've given. There's more. And on Substack, you will find my 25-page CV of all of my publications and lectures. Do I know everything? No. But I know more than the average physician, and I'm constantly learning more. And by the time you finish Come Again, you'll know more than the average physician. Much more. For subscription options, the Come Again podcast can be purchased on the Apple Podcast platform and delivered to your preferred podcast provider. Go to drstryker.substack.com for more information. And with that, I bring you Come Again, Postmenopause Sexuality and Orgasm. Coming next, Episode 2, Do You Have Good Sex? A Visit with Dr. Ruth. I'm Dr. Lauren Stryker, and this is Part 1, Episode 2, Do You Have Good Sex? A Visit with Dr. Ruth. A couple of years ago, my husband and I had the opportunity to meet the late sex therapist, Dr. Ruth Westheimer. We walked into her apartment and she greeted us with a warm hug, and then without missing a beat asked, "Do you have good sex?" I was slightly taken aback. I mean, she was Dr. Ruth, but I'd never met her before, and I was uncharacteristically stunned into silence. But nothing fazes my husband, Jason, and he immediately said, "Yes, we do." She responded, "I'm so glad." I've always wondered what she would have said if he'd said, "No, we have terrible sex." I'm not suggesting that you should greet future visitors to your home with that question. Dr. Ruth can get away with it, but if a stranger or even a friend came up to you and asked if you have good sex, you could justifiably respond, "That's none of your goddamn business." Gynecologists have the unique position that this personal, invasive, and otherwise inappropriate question is our business, literally. Yet, it's the rare gynecologist or any other healthcare professional who asks about libido, pain with sexual activity, the ability to become aroused, or difficulty with orgasm. In other words, do you have good sex? In a 2012 study that was published in the Journal of Sexual Medicine titled "What We Don't Talk About When We Don't Talk About Sex," 1,154 OBGYNs were surveyed and asked if they talked to their patients about specific sexual issues, such as pleasure and low libido. 40% said they routinely asked about sexual activity. 28% said that they asked about problems with sex. 13% said, "Oh yeah, I ask about pleasure." And if you're thinking, well, those are probably male gynecologists, the breakdown was 53% male, 47% female. And yes, female gynecologists, particularly if they're no longer delivering babies and just practicing gynecology, were roughly 3 times more likely to ask about sexual activity and issues. And then there was this. Physicians who stated their religion as Roman Catholic or Evangelical Protestants were the least likely to ask about sex. Hindus, Jews, and Muslim doctors were the most likely to ask, which makes sense since those tend to be sex-positive religions. Dr. Ruth wrote an entire book called Heavenly Sex, Sexuality, and the Jewish Tradition with the overriding theme that sexuality and spirituality are intertwined, and Jewish men have an obligation to ensure that their wives experience pleasure. I'm not sure all Jewish men know that, and many might benefit from reading her book. Just saying. But overall, this is a concept that is relatively rare in our male-centric society, where men have an expectation of pleasure with sexual activity, but women generally don't. Back to that study. Overall, 72% of OBGYNs admitted that they didn't ask their patients if they have sexual problems, and 87% didn't ask anything about pleasure. But I think the numbers are actually much higher. You know, I often talk to groups with hundreds of women, and I routinely ask if the last time they went to the gynecologist, sex was addressed. So I start by asking people to raise their hands if the last time they went to the OBGYN, the doctor brought up the topic of sex in any way. And usually about 30% of hands go up. I then ask, "Were you asked about sexual problems, such as loss of libido or pain with sexual activity?" And usually about half those hands will go down. But when I ask, "Did your gynecologist specifically ask if you were able to have an orgasm?" usually only 3 or 4 hands remain in the air, and they're generally my patients. So my casual surveys fall right in line with what the studies show and are also an indication that even though the study I quoted is over 10 years old, nothing much has changed. Bottom line, it's the rare OBGYN that asks about sexual function and pleasure. Other specialties, such as internal medicine, I mean, you wouldn't really expect to bring it up since anything below the belly button is pretty much a no-fly zone. But OBGYNs are the doctors who are looking directly at your vulva and inside your vagina. So you would think that a question about the use of said vulva and vagina would be routine. One major problem with this study is that the doctors said they asked, but that doesn't mean they did. I would have loved to poll the patients to see if they agreed. Even the authors of the study acknowledged that they relied on self-reporting, which was likely an overestimation. Another thing, of the doctors who did ask about sex, you know, the supposedly sex-positive ones, 25% of them admitted that they often disapproved of their patients' sexual practices and didn't hesitate to tell them so. So, great. They ask about sex and then shame them about whatever they're doing. Roman Catholic or evangelical Protestant doctors made up the majority of the disapproval group. And I'd actually forgotten about that part of the study until I just went back to review it. And I was stunned. I imagine a conversation like, "Hey, doc, I'm kind of worried because lately when I use my vibrator, which is usually a sure thing, nothing happens. What do you think?" "What do I think? I think you should be playing pickleball instead of trying to have sex with a vibrator." But that fictitious conversation would never happen because I've already established that doctors don't bring up sex. And studies show that women don't bring it up either. Sometimes it's because they're embarrassed, but often it's because they assume there are no solutions to their lack of libido, pain with penetration, or inability to have an orgasm, and it's just an expected part of aging that needs to be accepted. And some women don't want to talk about sexual concerns with their doctor, who's accompanied by a 25-year-old medical student who she's pretty sure went to high school with her son. But often women don't broach the topic because they're waiting for the doctor to bring it up, which I've already established is not going to happen. When was the last time a doctor asked you if you were able to orgasm? I'll rephrase that. Has a doctor ever asked? I'm betting no. And studies show that if you're postmenopause or single or gay or non-binary or have medical issues, the likelihood is dramatically lower. Astonishing, given that difficulty having an orgasm is the second most common sexual complaint in postmenopause women. There's a reason most doctors don't ask about libido, painless sexual activity, or trouble having an orgasm. In other words, do you have good sex? They don't ask because if you do say something along the lines of, "I'm so glad you asked, sex really hurts," or "my libido's in the toilet," or "I used to have orgasms just fine and now I can't," they will have no response other than, "I'm sorry." Or even worse, "That happens when you get older." No doctor is going to ask a question they don't have the expertise to answer. Menopause is simply not part of training for most gynecologists, and if they do get some training in menopause, I can guarantee you there is no training in postmenopause sexual function beyond the basics of treating vaginal dryness. So doctors pretty much never bring up sexual function or sexual pleasure, and when the conversation does happen, it's generally started by women who are desperate for help and end up walking out the door with essentially no information. An MD after a name is no assurance that the person to whom you're about to bear your soul and your vagina is an expert when it comes to menopause, which is why I hear every day from women that went to their doctor with their dry, giny woes and were told, "Buy a lube, hot flashes, dress in layers, tough it out." End of story. The obvious question is why most gynecologists, even really good gynecologists from great medical schools and great training programs, are not experts when it comes to sexual medicine and menopause. It's simple. 70% of OBGYN residency programs do not include menopause in their curriculum. If it is included, it may be one lecture or one article, and that lecture is usually about hot flashes, not a lack of libido. I ran one of the few academic sexual medicine and menopause centers in the country, yet the doctors in that OBGYN residency program spent no time in our clinic. It's not that they didn't want to. Many expressed an interest, but their required time in labor and delivery, surgery, oncology, fertility, and high-risk obstetrics left no time for learning about menopause, much less sexual problems post-menopause. Once someone finishes their training and starts to practice, the majority of patients in a general OBGYN practice are pregnant, wanting to get pregnant, or wanting to not get pregnant. For the typical OBGYN, the first time they see any volume of patients going through menopause is 20 years into their practice, when the moms they delivered are now trading in their birth control pills for hormone therapy pills. There are exceptions, of course. Many healthcare professionals do a terrific job of asking and answering those questions. Most of those people are my friends, and they learned it on their own after they finished their training. I didn't learn any of this stuff during my training. I learned it on my own because I was motivated to do so. So back to Dr. Ruth's question. Are any midlife women having good sex? Is good sex even possible postmenopause? From an evolutionary point of view, there's no reason, and therefore should be no motivation for women to have sex once they're no longer able to reproduce. We are put here to have babies. So biologically, it makes sense that sex is painful. It makes sense that libido is diminished, and it makes sense that a decent orgasm is out of the question when reproduction is no longer possible. From an evolutionary point of view, post-reproductive age women should be helping taking care of their grandchildren so that their mother can keep getting pregnant. But today, women in their 50s, 60s, and 70s are not taking care of their grandchildren. They're running companies, flying planes, doing surgery, and writing books. And they would like to have a decent orgasm when they are taking a break from running the world. There are a number of scientific articles published about postmenopause sexuality, and I'll get into the details of those later. But it's important to mention now that almost every single study in the medical literature that addresses postmenopause sexual activity only includes women under the age of 60, only inquires about intercourse, or sticks to a specific problem, usually vaginal dryness. In 2023, the Kinsey Institute conducted a study in conjunction with Cosmopolitan magazine that gave some interesting insights into sexuality over 60. Yes, the Kinsey Institute is in the premier academic institution that has conducted sexual research since 1947 and publishes hundreds of articles every year in academic journals. It seems surprising that the Kinsey Institute would conduct a scientific study on behalf of a women's magazine, but it actually makes sense. Cosmo is known as a publication that acknowledges that women like sex and seek out sex, but that wasn't always the case. Cosmopolitan started out as a typical women's magazine in 1886, loaded with articles on how to keep your marriage intact and your husband happy by preparing the perfect meatloaf for him to enjoy after a hard day at work. All that changed in 1965 under the leadership of Helen Gurley Brown, when Cosmo morphed from a proper women's magazine, written by men, into a much racier version. Helen Gurley Brown got rid of articles about why it was a good idea to wait until the third date before kissing a boy, and instead had stories on the best position for giving and getting oral sex. Sales exploded. When Helen Gurley Brown died at age 90, the New York Times referred to her as Helen Gurley Brown, who is the author of Sex and the Single Girl, shocked early 1960s America with the news that unmarried women not only had sex, but thoroughly enjoyed it. In the 60s and 70s, the typical Cosmo reader was a single woman in her 20s. But things have changed. Women who grew up sneaking a copy when their parents weren't around are now grandparents who have their own subscription. So it's appropriate that Cosmopolitan was interested in knowing more about the sex lives of their current readers and enlisted the help of the Kinsey Institute to design and provide the questions for a national survey of sex over 60. And as a senior research fellow of the Kinsey Institute, I was thrilled when they asked me to be part of the team to come up with the questions, which were ultimately answered by over 3,000 women. And I want to emphasize that since these women were all over 60, 100% of them were postmenopause. The results, which addressed all aspects of sexual function, will ultimately be published in a scientific publication. But here's a sneak peek of a few that I found interesting. In response to the question, have your orgasms changed? 53% said their orgasms were about the same. 26% said they were worse, but 21% said they were better. So 74% of sexually active women over 60 said their orgasms were the same or better. That's encouraging. The next question was, do you agree or disagree with the statement, intercourse is not necessary for sexual satisfaction? Well, it's hardly shocking that 60% of women over 60 do not need a penis in their vagina to have a good time. Only 15% said that intercourse was a requirement for sexual satisfaction. Dr. Ruth said it best. To know someone sexually is to know that the sexual experience is much more than just a penis inside a vagina. We then asked women to compare their orgasms when they were with their partner to orgasms they had during masturbation. During partnered sex, women had an orgasm 57% of the time. During masturbation, 77% of the time. Overall, most women who participated in this survey enjoyed sex with or without intercourse, with or without an orgasm, and with or without having a partner. Helen Gurley Brown, who died in 2012, is no doubt holding a vibrator and smiling down in approval. Now, I assume if you're listening to this, that's not the case for you, and you are struggling with your libido, pain, the ability to become aroused, and have an orgasm. The point of my running through the Cosmo statistics is to assure you that fabulous sex after 60, 70, 80 is possible, very possible. But if your sex life is far from fabulous, you're not alone. In large surveys, more than 50% of women struggle with at least one sexual issue, and when not given solutions, abandon sexual activity altogether. The women in the Cosmo survey were sexually active, which is going to skew the numbers. It did not include women who had jumped off the sexual ship, so to speak. So although your doctor may not have solutions for your lack of libido or inability to have an orgasm, I do. And that's why I wrote Come Again. So do you have good sex? In the words of Dr. Ruth, life is too short to have bad sex. So I hope you're as excited about this series as I am. If you haven't been given a solution, it doesn't mean there isn't a solution. Come Again is all about solutions. Thanks for joining me, and if you're looking for more inside information, check out my Substack. Just go to drstriker.substack.com, and you can also follow me on Instagram at drstrike.